You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wind Up Podcast. I am your host, Mike of MTGA Wines, and today is my hot take on tariffs. Oh boy, we're going to get a little political here. It's going to be a thing. We'll see how it all shakes down and if I get ostracized or not here in the industry. It should be fun. Before we get into the debate that is bound to ensue after this episode, let's have our quick couple of announcements. As usual, please follow us on all of our social networks at MTGA Wines on YouTube, the Book of Face, the Instagram, and the social network formerly known as Twitter. Be sure to head to our website, mtgawines.com. You can find out a little bit more about us, sign up for our newsletter. You can also submit questions for our monthly Q&A episode, which is just around the corner. We do it the last Wednesday of every month. You can go to our homepage, again, mtgawines.com, scroll down a little bit. There is a little email box that you can fill out, submit your questions, and I will be sure to answer them to the best of my ability, or we'll look it up here on the show as we go through them. While you're on our website, head to our shop, head to our upcoming events. We are headed all over the country this spring and into the summer months. We've got trips planned to Columbus, Indianapolis, Nashville, Louisiana. The HBIC is going to have her first trip to New Roads, of all places, outside of Baton Rouge and also into New Orleans. We're going to be in Las Vegas. We're going to be in Kansas City, Columbia, Missouri. We're going to be everywhere. So we'll be posting more information and giving you more heads up on other things that are coming down the pipeline, but you can find our current list of events posted there and what we have scheduled at the moment. You can also drop us a line through that email box on our site and find out a little bit more. Last but certainly not least, be sure to like, follow, subscribe to the show wherever you're consuming your podcasts. If you can, leave a little rating or review. That's hugely helpful with the algorithm and getting this show out into the airwaves on the interweb there to make it a little easier for people to find. So please give us a shout if you can. All right, let's get into this, shall we? This has been something that obviously I think everyone's kind of been paying attention to in some way, shape, or form, just given the political, you know, world that we live in, and a lot of the rhetoric that's been tossed around on insert your place of getting news here. It's a trying time for the industry that is already struggling here in the U.S., already having a hard time as we, you know, got through last year and started this year. And the threat of a 200% tariff on wines, liquors, things coming from the EU specifically has been floated by the Trump administration very recently. And there have been all kinds of people providing their, you know, insights or their thoughts on this, very much against the tariffs and kind of what that would do for businesses around the United States in particular. A couple of that I found very interesting were from the one and only Somme Vivant, Amanda McCrossin, who I respect dearly and follow her because she's got great takes on just about everything that comes down the pipeline, whatever. Even if you disagree with it, she's always got a good opinion, I think, and is well thought out. Read the article by Eric Asimov in the New York Times. Read a little something on Yahoo. We've heard from other winemakers, other colleagues, friends of ours. You know, a lot of this, you know, we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants to see if this even actually happens. Who knows? Maybe you're listening to this and it officially takes effect. We'll see how it all shakes down. And I want to kind of present the argument against, you know, why these tariffs should go into place. maybe a little bit of a discussion as to, you know, just where the economy is headed in general and how that impacts, you know, our industry, but also the hot take. Let's try and figure out why these tariffs would be a good thing and how it could potentially help the local, you know, domestic wine industry, because I think that is something that is worth talking about. Although I think the overwhelming majority of opinions that are being floated out there right now would disagree with that. But I'm here to make that argument. So let's go ahead and, you know, start with the negatives, shall we? Number one, for anyone out there, as this might, you know, be no surprise, for anyone out there, consumers like yourself, I'm a consumer of wine as well. If these tariffs go into effect and we're seeing 200% price increases on these wines, guess what? The price of those wines are going to go up significantly, right? That just comes with the territory. So maybe that, you know, $10 or $15 bottle of Prosecco that you love to enjoy for your mimosas during brunch, all of a sudden, that's going to be, you know, $30, $45, $60 a bottle. A little bit more expensive than what it used to be. You know, and let's, of course, talk about like grower champagne. We all love a good bottle of champagne now and again, I think. Celebrate the good times, you know. Nothing like hearing that pop of the cork as it flies out of the bottle as you try not to hit somebody in the face with it. It's a good thing. It's fun. It's lively. Gets the day started off right. Who doesn't love champagne for breakfast? Come on. You know, imagine paying $60, $75 for that great bottle of champagne. You're not splurging on the stuff that's up over $100. You're just paying like, you know, it's an expensive bottle of wine, but it's worth it because it's special and it's really good. Now imagine paying $225, $300 a bottle for that, right? Not the best. Very clearly, if these go into effect, it's going to have a huge ripple effect into the purchasing options that we as consumers have. And there are going to be many of us, quite frankly, that get priced out of some of the wines that we probably love. And that sucks. From the consumer standpoint, that's a terrible thing. You know, there are a lot of good wines that this world has to offer. You should be able, we should be able to enjoy them at our leisure without having to worry about stuff like this. But I think that's only a small portion of the story. And I think that's where people are trying to be ultra relatable with this topic is they're trying to, of course, point out how it affects you directly, me directly. They're trying to go right into your kitchen, right into your wine fridge and say, hey, that bottle right there, that's going to be 4x what you paid for it. Your pocketbook is going to be directly affected. Your wine consumption, your habits, and what you actually enjoy is going to be directly affected. You personally are going to be directly affected. And I think that's a good way to hit home with people, right? Like make it relatable in a really good way. Like what is really kind of the negative aspect of this and how is it going to impact you directly? Obviously that hits home for everybody. That should probably go without saying, but we'll say it anyway. But there's a broader thing here, and that's all the businesses that are bringing these wines to the United States, right? These distributors, these brokers that search out these producers, that find ways to bring these wines from Europe to the US. Now, this is something that I've discussed with a couple of friends of mine that live just down the street here. And they work with some tripping over my own words. Apparently I need to have like a second or third or fourth sip of wine before I actually start this from time to time. This is the benefit of recording this in the evening, actually, is I can pour myself a glass of wine and just like enjoy myself a little bit. Much better. So these friends of ours, they work with some distributors back east. And they are a small producer, but they primarily sell their wine through the distribution game. Like that's what they do. That's what they're really good at. Actually, I asked them for advice. Brittany asked them for advice. We talk to them all the time about this stuff because they're an amazing resource for that kind of thing. And the experience they've had thus far, and they're not the only ones who have said this, but they're the ones that are in the closest proximity to us that we've discussed this a lot more with, is that the distributors that they're working with that would normally be ordering their wine in a little bit more volume or at like a certain rate aren't right now because they're trying to figure out how much money they need to have in the bank to buy the European wines that they need to have because that's a huge section of their business, right? And for a lot of folks on the East Coast, European wines are way more prevalent. You guys are just a little bit closer than we are here on the West Coast. And it's a much more popular thing. I think those of us in California, we probably drink more California, Oregon, Washington wines than you guys back east. Obviously, that's a generalization, not always true, but that tends to be the case. You have distributors, I think in the Yahoo article that I read, that quote saying, hey, like somewhere between, depending on who you ask, it could, you know, these European wines could be 60 or 80% of a company's business. And imagine that the business that you're in, if your costs went up 200% and how you're supposed to float that, much less get your consumer or your clientele to buy into that and say, hey, it's going to be okay. You're just going to have to pay a little extra. That's a little bit of a tough conversation to have. There are a lot of small businesses in the US that are going to be hugely affected by this on the distribution side, just trying to get these wines in, much less the people that are here in the US that work with some of these same folks because they have a, you know, an array of wines they offer that come from abroad and come from California and other places within the US. And now they're saying, hey, we're cutting our budget with California wines because we need to be able to afford the European wines. That sucks. Because now not only have you screwed over the people and the consumers that want these European wines, but now you're screwing over local producers as well who are trying to sell their wines. And you're seeing their sales slow down. You're seeing the accessibility and the availability of those wines go down. You're impacting businesses at every level in a very negative way, potentially. It sucks. It's bad. Almost any way you slice it, right? I mean, not to mention, let's consider, you know, the European businesses that rely potentially on the US for a significant amount of their exports and their business. You know, this is a globalized world we live in. Whether we like it or not, we all kind of rely on each other in some way, shape, or form. So that is, you know, teamwork make the dream work. Like, do we really need this kind of rhetoric? Do we really need a 200% tariff to, quote, support, you know, the local industry versus bringing in imports? Right? Is this even a remotely good idea? Could there be any upside? The overwhelming majority of people discussing this topic would lead you to believe that there isn't one. But I'm going to try and pose one to you. This is something that I think everybody so far that I've talked to disagrees with. But I'm curious what you, the consumer, think. I want to hear from you guys. Because there's a lot of people within the industry talking about this. There's a lot of people who are, you know, reporting on this through news outlets and other things. And that's all well and good. But I'm genuinely curious what people who buy wines from California, probably buy wines from Europe as well, you know, whether they're out to dinner or they buy it off the shelf in a retail shop. I really want to know what you guys think. Because this is where my brain went with this conversation. And I haven't had the chance to talk to my friends about this. This is literally the first time I'm kind of like voicing this thought because I've been in like just listen mode. Just read, listen, absorb as much information as you can. And then let's try to put together some sort of rational thought. Now, everything that I just mentioned in terms of the negative aspects of this policy are true. Let's face it, if this goes into effect, these are the things that are already happening and what will happen. You're seeing this with the same friends of ours that we talked to. They export a lot of their wine to Canada. And it's about 25% of their business. Canada has, in essence, shut off any and all distribution of American wines within their country. They've said, hey, cool, if you're going to disrespect us, if you're going to call our prime minister a governor, if you're going to call us the 51st state, if you're going to disrespect us as a country and you're going to put these tariffs on us, then we're just not buying American anymore. And some of you might be like, ah, well, let them. Well, guess what? I have friends of mine whose livelihood is being affected by that in an incredibly negative way. And quite frankly, I don't think that's any way you should be trading one of your major trade partners, if not your biggest trade partner. Realistically, it's not a great thing. It's not a good look. And it's alienating quite literally one of our closest allies by, you know, proximity. Take that for what you will from the political side of things. But when it starts hit, when friends of mine and their pocketbooks start getting hit, and they start suffering and they start struggling because of some of this stuff, that's a hard, bitter pill to swallow. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that. Right? That's not something I think I'm ever going to be able to do. Now, when it comes to this European Union and wine and liquor coming from there, you know, we don't, like for us, we don't do hardly any, we exported 10 cases total last year. It's not a lot, right? We'll see if that gets impacted. We'll see if there's even any room to grow our export business. I doubt it given, you know, what's going on right now, but you know, let's wait and see what happens. So my first thought, and this was when I was, you know, reading, you know, about some of the distributors and how they were going to be impacted. Now, obviously, if a distributor, you know, somewhere here in the U.S. relies on a significant amount of their business coming from Europe because they're importing a huge volume of European wines, you know, that hits them right in their pocketbook, much like it's hitting some of my friends in their pocketbook. And that's something that really sucks.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And I feel for them. But is this growing pain? And is this change to try to get more Americans to drink more American-made wine? Is this short-term pain, hopefully, that we can get through it, if we can get through it, is it worth it to try to grow the American wine industry here in the U.S.? Now, in looking up the numbers, I tried to do a little bit of research, and I, for the life of me, I probably Googleized the wrong words. But I could not track down like how much, you know, the U.S. consumes in terms of like American-made wine versus like imports. I wasn't able to distill it down to those numbers. If someone out there has that info, I'd love to see it because I'm just curious. I'm a numbers guy. That's something that I'm genuinely interested in. But when distributors started saying that they rely on this business, obviously I'm not a huge fan of distributors. I work with a couple good ones, luckily enough. But when local companies aren't supporting the local industry, that's a little bit of a thorn in the side to me. And it's a little frustrating because it's like, hey, there's a lot of good wine being made in this country. Why aren't you trying to promote and sell that? Why aren't you focusing on U.S. made wine versus wines from elsewhere? You know, that's this question that I have. It's the same reason why I'm surprised that there are some restaurants, you know, in Napa that have a huge European selection or, you know, maybe even a majority of wines coming from Europe. It still happens for a certain few spots. It's rare, it's few and far between, but it does happen. Because I truly believe, and this is something I think it's going to be hard for anyone to convince me otherwise, but I think that the American distribution system has done a pretty shit-tastic job of promoting American wines historically. You know, a lot of it can be, I don't want to blame them necessarily for like chasing the money necessarily, but it is true. There are plenty of European wines that you can buy for pennies on the dollar than what you can buy from California or Napa. The way their industry is subsidized, how affordable it is to make some of their wines compared to what we deal with, especially in a place like Napa, it's you can't compete, you know, when it lands on our shores and a distributor can sell it for $8 or $9 a bottle versus something like our rosé, you know, which starts at like 26 a bottle at a retail price. It's like, geez, like, well, how you can't compete with that. Even if you're discounting it significantly for a distributor, like it's still going to be more expensive than some of these European wines. So we're up a creek with no paddle. Like, we're just stuck. There's not a lot we can do unless we just want to take a loss, right? Or if we can make enough volume to make it make really slim margins make sense. And I think this goes back to just the overwhelming, you know, terrible quality of cheap wines in the US as well. This is should be a huge part of this conversation, is that the affordable wines that are made in this country suck. They're bad. Very typically, there's no finesse. They're sugary. They're heavily manufactured. And they just aren't what they should be from a quality perspective when you talk about anything of an equivalent, you know, price range in Europe. Let's be honest. That's the honest to goodness truth. Cheap wine in the US sucks in general, period. Right? That's on top of the fact that it's already more expensive to do business here in this industry. Right? Just the way it is. So you have a lot of external forces acting here, right? But it's still, there's still this like little thing that bothers me about, you know, US companies that don't have a focus on US products. Like, I get it. Like, hey, people want their Italian wines, people want their French wines and their champagne. Like, fine, you found the cool niche and you're killing it as a distribution business. Awesome. That's great. Do any of these folks think that maybe it's a disservice to the American wine industry? Like, could instead of producing, or, you know, instead of supporting, you know, grower champagne, could you support small grower sparkling projects here in the US? Could we find a way to help them? Right? Instead of focusing on Bordeaux first growths, could you focus on high-end Napa wines, right? Instead of focusing on, you know, the Rhone Valley, could you look at Paso Robles in Southern California? Like, are there options available to us? I think there are. And it's frustrating at times, as someone who makes wines here in the US, that we sometimes don't get the support that I think we deserve. Before people get too angry at me for this opinion, keep in mind I'm playing devil's advocate. I already told you at the very beginning why I think this is a terrible policy and why I think it shouldn't go this way. I'm trying to strongman the other side of the coin here, and I already feel like it's going poorly. But I'm trying here because I'm trying to put myself into some sort of like positive light of like, okay, this comes down the pipeline. What actually happens? And the early ramifications of it, like the short term, it's really bad. The long term, maybe there's a way through it. And some of these companies can adjust and adapt and find producers within the US to support and carve out that niche. But then you also need the buy-in of retailers and restaurants on top of that, right? The whole chain has to completely change their opinion of how they do business, the wines they sell, and what they want to focus on potentially. Like, there's so many moving parts and so many people that are going to be impacted in an incredibly negative way. And then you're going to ask them, hey, do us a solid, because we understand your focus is this and you're into this, but you need to be into this. That's a tall ask, man. It's bad. It's bad, right? I think it is. But let's see if I can strongman this a little. Let's see if I can find a positive. So let's say we get through this rough patch. Do we really think that if, you know, and you as a consumer, if you're listening out there, do you as a consumer really think that if you see the price of European wine skyrocket, that you're going to second guess buying them and you're going to try and find something domestic to support? Do you think that's the natural progression? Or do you just understand that that's a little bit more of a splurge now and you'll still buy that wine regardless because you love it? Maybe. Maybe not. My crystal ball, like, I don't have a good crystal ball laying around here, so I don't know. But like that's what they're looking for here. Like this is the boom they're expecting for like the local American wine industry. It's like, oh, people will just have no choice. They're not going to want to spend this much money on these wines. You know, some of them are going to go out of reach for some people. They're going to try and find, hopefully, a equivalent domestic alternative. I mean, I get that argument. I understand where people are coming from with that argument. And frankly, in a perfect world, that's what I would want. I want more support for wine in general in the U.S., but specifically American-made wine here in the U.S. You know, we've talked about this before in that, you know, wine here in this country is third fiddle to beer and liquor by like a long shot. Like it's not even close how far behind wine is in terms of a popular beverage when compared to liquor and beer. So I'm of the opinion that needs to change. We as an industry need to find ways to embrace more consumers and bring them into our world and hopefully convince you like, hey, having a nice glass of wine at the end of the day can be a nice thing. You don't have to be a fucking master somm and know what hillside it was grown and where the sun exposure was. Like no one cares about that except for somms. Some of us nerds do care. Let's be honest. Some of us do. But you don't need to know that kind of stuff, right? I'll use this bottle as an example. This is a 2018 Claret from Bremer Vineyards. Shout out to my Uncle Mike who works up there. I know nothing about this wine. And before I started recording this, I was dancing around the room for 4 minutes trying to figure out, I just want a glass of red wine. I had some stuff open for a tasting, but that was yesterday. And, you know, I don't really want to drink my own wine at home. Let's find something else that's just good. And kind of in the spirit of drinking something that's local, I was like, all right, let's go. Oh, shit. Throwing things. Ignore that. I was like, let's open up something that's just up, you know, up Howe Mountain Road a little, or Deer Park Road a little ways. Ugh. Throwing things around my office. I'm getting all animated and fired up over here. I don't know anything about it. I don't really care right now. I just want a good glass of red wine. That's all. That's the mood I'm in right now. I'm not going to look this up. I'm not going online. I'm probably not even going to let my Uncle Mike know that I had a bottle of this unless I happen to run into him in like the next 24 hours. It's just, I just need a good glass of red wine. And it happened to be in the wine fridge behind me. So I was like, all right, perfect. This sounds good. Boom, done. Point being, as I continue from like one tangent to the next here, is that that's how it should be. Like wine hopefully would just like sound good. And the fact that like cheap wine in this country is so shitty, it's not doing us as an industry any favors. Like when you can't even find good affordable wine necessarily in this country without it being heavily, heavily processed, a bunch of sugar in it, and just bleh, garbage. Like, come on. Like we as an industry can be better than that. If we really want to compete and we really want to steal more market share away from beer and liquor, like that's what we're going to have to do, because that's what Europe has been great at, is supplying great wines at an amazing value, even though they had to ship it across a damn ocean to get it here. Shoot, and I love European wines. In the big fridge that's behind me, I got two shelves dedicated to them from trips that we've been on, from places that we've actually visited, you know, from, there's a wine club down in Napa that we're a member of because we don't drink a lot of European wine here, but you know, every once in a while it just sounds good and we like having the option. And that's why I think a lot of this idea of a 200% tariff is a bad idea, because I don't want consumers to have any less options. I want you to be able to go to the store and buy what you like for a reasonable price. That's me being selfish as a consumer as well. I want wine to be accessible. Whatever you want to drink, however you want to drink it. But we are an American wine company, and I want people to drink more American wine specifically, because our industry is hurting right now as it is. So I'm torn with this idea of, hey, you know, institute a tariff and support the local industry, allegedly, right? Big ol' allegedly there. Or, hey, this is a terrible idea and consumers need to have good options no matter what, no matter where it's coming from. I don't like the idea of a 200% tariff on these beverages. Do I think there is a very small chance that it potentially helps the local industry in the long term? Flip a coin, but maybe. But the negative is the negative impact on my friends, some of the distributors that we work with, some of the distributors that they work with, the American-built businesses that sell these European wines. Is it worth putting them on the chopping block and saying, hey, this is just how it is. It's just business. We understand you folk, 60-80% of your portfolio is focused on European wines. You're either going to have to switch to U.S. wines or I guess you're out of business. Is that worth it to make that shift? I don't know if I could make, if I was in that position and I could flip a switch tomorrow and turn the tariffs on or off, I don't know if I could flip them on. Because I don't want colleagues within this industry to suffer any more than they already are. This industry's so hard to get buy-in. Something like this, to see people's dreams get crushed, big companies even get crushed because they can no longer afford the wines they need to stay in business. You know, maybe they can find an alternative to sell. Maybe they convince their retail shops and restaurants and all their accounts to start buying more local. That's a tall order. And whether or not that actually happens, I don't think it will. There's my little bit of pessimism and why I don't think this is a good idea. Because I just don't think it's possible. I would love to be proven wrong and see the American wine industry grow like it never has before once you get through a growing pain such as this, if these tariffs are to go into place. I would love to see more small producers in the U.S. have the ability to succeed. Even some of the larger producers, sure. Just please make better wine cheaply and affordably. So, like, it's not just all this sugary bullshit. Like, just do us a favor, will ya? Right? I think this kind of stuff is possible. There are potential good things, but I don't know if those good things outweigh the bad in this situation. And I know too many people, unfortunately, that are being affected in incredibly negative ways by this. And I think that bias is going to be what, you know, kind of controls my opinion on this topic. It's a challenging one, you know. I don't know if there's a right answer or a right way to get through it. I think things do need to change in some way. I do want to see more support for local industry. You know, the example that I always give to people is in kind of a, you know, strongman kind of argument. If you go to Alsace, if you go to Chianti, if you go to, you know, insert European city or town here, if you're dining there, if you're drinking wine there, you're drinking wine from like that area. It's hyper local, typically. You might find, you know, the really nice restaurant has some stuff from elsewhere, or maybe there's a good wine shop that kind of brings in a little bit of variety. But the overwhelming majority of the selection is coming from that region. And that's even like in a specific country. You go to Alsace, like it's Alsatian wines. You go to Burgundy, it's Burgundian wines. You go to the Rhone Valley, it's Rhone wines, right? Even within a country like France or Italy, it gets hyper local really quick. And those are the wines that you consume because those are the wines that are made there. Is that the mentality that we need to adopt and that we need to have as a country? There's a big part of me that says yes. Do we need to sacrifice a bunch of businesses here that have built themselves on being kind of this intermediary to bring some of these other countries' wares here? I don't know. I don't think that's necessarily a good idea. But we certainly need to find a better way to get American wine into people's glasses and convince them that, hey, this is a beverage that's worth enjoying. Man, it's complicated. And I feel like I kind of talked myself in a circle here. you know, reading, you know, what I mentioned Amanda McCrossin. You can find her post on Instagram under the under Somme Vivant is her handle. You can check out the Eric Asimov article on the New York Times if you want to check that out and, you know, go through their paywall or whatever it is. You know, I think read some of the Yahoo articles, dive into this a little bit more. And, you know, the best thing I could do in this kind of situation when it's a tumultuous time with a lot of opinions flying around is, I mean, this is what I do. You know, anytime I have an opinion, you know, political or wine or anything, you know, is I try to argue the other side. I love playing devil's advocate because I think it's the only way as humans that we grow is to challenge ourselves. I don't care if that's at the gym working out. I don't care if it's just an opinion you have about what your city or county is doing with a certain, you know, proposition. It's worth diving into what you disagree with and seeing if you can find, you know, maybe some sort of common ground. Or maybe, worst case scenario, it reinforces what you already believe. Or maybe you find something that you hadn't considered before, you know. In this situation, you know, I don't know if I've found enough to consider that would say, hey, yes, let's flip on these tariffs tomorrow. The sooner the better. I don't think that that's the right answer. I don't. Because I think far too many Americans are going to be affected in a negative way, especially in an industry that's hurting right now, period. Is there a time and place where we need to fight the good fight and try and get more people to drink more American wine? Absolutely. Is this the way to go about it? I don't think so. I think you can do this with more finesse. You can be a little bit more diligent and tactful, I suppose, and really come up with a better strategy than just saying, hey, we're flipping this switch and fuck them, they're on their own. Because that seems to be the way it's going. We'll see. We'll see how it shakes down. I think for consumers, this idea sucks. For some distributors and importers, obviously they're going to get screwed. You already have businesses here that are being affected by it because they're being told, no, we have to save money to buy these European wines anyway, because that's the majority of what of our business. So these California wines are taking a back seat. So it seems to be backfiring already. But again, is getting through this tumultuous time and what maybe could be growing pains, could it be better for the American wine industry? Yet to be seen. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm very curious. I hope some of you jump into the comments or send us some notes because I would love to hear from you guys and really hear from consumers, you know, people from outside the wine industry and what you think of this stuff and how it impacts you and what decision making you might have if you go into a shop and maybe your favorite Italian wine is, you know, 4x the price tomorrow, right? What would you do? Would you try and find a cheaper Italian alternative? Would you try and find a cheaper California alternative? Like, where would you go? What would you think? You know, I think these are the conversations that we as an industry need to have with you guys more often and do a better job of bringing you into our world and trying to figure out what your needs are. I think the wine industry is kind of, you know, especially here in the US, has kind of put itself on a little bit of an ivory pedestal that we're just going to do our thing. And I think it's high time that we really start paying a lot more attention to the needs and wants of the people who support us. I don't think this industry, for the majority of its existence, has done a good enough job of that. And it's part of these discussions that I think we need to have. Like, do we just need to be better? Do we need to fight for more airtime? Do we need to push for things like these tariffs to get that airtime? Or does this rising tide raise all ships? If it's European wine or American wine, just as long as people are drinking wine, is that good enough? Right? These are the conversations I think we need to have. Y'all have an amazing rest of your week, evening, afternoon, morning, whenever you're tuning into the show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please continue to like, share, subscribe, rate and review the show if you can. Be sure to follow us on all of our social networks. That is at MTGA Wines on YouTube, Instagram, the Book of Face, and the social network formerly known as Twitter. Be sure to head to our website, mtgawines.com. Check out our upcoming events, as well as scroll down on that homepage. Fill out that little email form if you want to submit some questions for our monthly Q&A. It's just coming around the corner. Check it out. We'll be sure to try and answer them here on the show. Take care. We'll see you next time on the Wind Up Podcast. Cheers.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.